Good afternoon, everyone. It is, what day of the week? Monday, 3/28/05. Man, it's going to be a long week. You are in the Senate Education and Workforce Committee. Couple of rules if you haven't been here before. If you've been here before, you're tired of me saying it, but not if your cell phone goes off. All cell phones must be on vibrate or turned off. Otherwise, you will be making a nice contribution to the Common School Fund. And Senator Cruz, how much is that up to this week?
It'd be 1,800 this week.
There you go.
What?
And if you're here to testify on a bill, sign-up sheets are over there in on the table on the side. So we are going to start out with Senate Bill 789. I'll open a public hearing on that. Then we're going to go to 454, which won't take very long, and then we'll get to the two bills that most of you are here for. So, Madam Administrator.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 789 establishes a process and criteria for renewal of a charter of a public charter school. The Dash 1 amendment was prepared so that this bill is exactly the same as House Bill 3174, which is in the House Education Committee, and the amendments to this bill require the applicants submit the charter to the sponsor at least 120 days prior to the expiration of the charter rather than 45 days, and it requires the sponsor to hold a public hearing within 30 days of a decision not to approve an application. Also in your packets, you have a big packet from Jim Green, and I'm sure he'll be excited to talk about that.
Oh, this big one.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, we'll have the only three people who are signed up to testify come up at once. Karen Hikas, Randy Harnish, and Jim Green. And Karen, I think you're going to take the lead. You can state your name and who you represent. That would be great.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Karen Hikas, and I am the Oregon Director of the Charter Schools Development Center, which provides technical assistance and advocacy services for charter schools and charter sponsors throughout Oregon State. And I believe you're receiving a handout from me right now. Mine is only two pages.
Thinner.
Yes, it's definitely thinner than Jim's. Thank you so much for hearing Senate Bill 789 today. I do encourage you to support Senate Bill 789. You probably know that charter schools are public schools that exist through contracts with local school districts, or in the case of appeals, the Department of Education. And charter school renewal is essentially non-existent within the current charter school law, which is Oregon Revised Statute Chapter 338. And it is one of the key priorities expressed by charter schools and sponsors throughout Oregon, because there's currently no criteria or timeline or process for charter school renewal. Based on the Charter School Development Center's 13 years of experience, we recommend that a charter law in a state does address all four of those elements: the criteria by which the charter school should be renewed or non-renewed, the timeline for that renewal, the process, and then the term length of the charter. There is an attachment to my memo that outlines essentially the core content of this bill, which is that it includes a renewal timeline, so that districts and charters have ample time on both sides to go through the renewal process, which can be very time-consuming, that essentially the renewal decision to renew is based on whether the charter school is meeting the terms of its charter. The whole concept of charter schools is that they are performance-based. They are supposed to produce accountability and be accountable for student performance and operational soundness in exchange for their autonomy. So we believe that charter schools should be based on their renewal should be based on their performance, that they should have an opportunity to appeal if they're denied, just like they do up front, and that renewal should last between 5 and 15 years so that families don't have to be concerned about the possibility of their students transferring in the event their school closes down, and also so that charters can be better positioned to lease and buy facilities, because there are no funds for charter school facilities right now, and it's hard to lease and buy when the school isn't sure if they're going to exist more than a year or two. And those are essentially the terms that are recommended. Do want to let you know that the House Education Committee heard this bill last week, House Bill 3174, and that committee directed the key stakeholders to form a work group to put together provisions that all the key stakeholders can support. So at this time, we met this morning. So at this time, we have the Oregon School Boards Association, the Department of Education, the Oregon Education Association, myself, and it's chaired by Representative John Dellum. So that is the status on the House side. And again, I thank you for hearing this bill and encourage you to support it through the process.
Thank you, Ms. Heitkes. Mr. Harnish, did you want to go next, or Mr. Green?
I'll defer to Mr. Green.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. What you have at the dais up there is a sample contract that I wrote on behalf of the Sherwood School District. And I thought it would be helpful for you as you deal with the issue of charter schools to look at what a charter contract looks like. And I believe on that document, on page 21, the bottom of page 21 is where the renewal part of that contract begins. And Ms. Heitkes is right. There is nothing currently in ORS Chapter 338 that deals with the issue of renewal of charter schools. And we're coming up on a lot of those being up for renewal right now. The Oregon School Boards Association believes there should be something in statute. We can't support Senate Bill 789 or House Bill 3174 as it's currently written. That's why we requested that a work group be put together to try to work these issues out. And as Ms. Heitkes said, we did meet this morning at 10 for about an hour. I think we made some really good progress on coming up with criteria for what a charter school and a sponsor must look at on the issue of renewal, also what the timelines will be on those renewal. A couple of sticking points deal still with the timeline. What is the length of that renewal after the initial charter is being done, and what is the role of the state board in that? Those are a couple of the sticking points, but I don't think that's something we cannot overcome. I think all parties around the table are very close to an agreement, and Madam Chair, we would welcome, I believe it's Senator Starr off of your committee, to come to that work group the next time we meet. Jim Keller, the House Committee Administrator for the House Education Committee, is going to have some amendments down to Sidney Hunt and Legislative Council. Once those are back, he was going to call that work group together again to start working on the other two issues that we're very close on.
Thank you, Mr. Green. I believe our bill was scheduled for hearing prior to the House bill being scheduled for hearing. I think that happened once before. But that's fine. I am happy that the House has taken a leadership role on trying to resolve the differences. And I did speak with Senator Starr earlier, and he has agreed to sit on that work group, have you not? I thought that's what you said to me. So I think that's what we'll do. Mr. Harnish, did you have any testimony, or were you just window dressing here in case there were questions?
Randy Harnish, Department of Education, and thank you for that. Intended or unintended
It was flattery, believe me.
I did want to mention that in reviewing the language in this bill, this bill does deal with an issue that is very real in a lot of charter schools. And as Mr. Green pointed out, we're at a time in our history with charters where we're going to be seeing a number of them come up for renewal. And it is, we believe, therefore appropriate to develop and kind of fill in a gap that currently exists in the law, which is proceduralizing the renewal process. As Jim also identified, there are some issues, and we concur that we have some concerns. This morning in our work group, we did come up, I think, with kind of a workable first draft that we'd like to continue on with, and I see no reason why the work group will not be able to come up with a product that we can all agree on. And at that point, just wanted to let you know that the Department of Education is very pleased to participate in this work group and look forward to a workable product.
Well, thank you. I know we have a work group over here of our own on ESDs, so we know all about that. Yes, Senator Morse.
Thank you. I'd just like to state for the record that I originally opposed vehemently the charter school movement. In 1999. I have since visited a number of charter schools. I think that they're doing, for the most part, the ones that I visited are doing a good job. My interest in this bill is to make sure that we have the best possible draft available. I think we're going to renew charter schools, and I think we have to do it in a way that will make them work more effectively with the district that they're in. So that's why I signed on to this bill. And so go forth and do good and come back, and we'll hopefully pass it out.
Senator Starr, you had a comment?
Briefly. I
have viewed this as an emerging issue, and certainly I have no tremendous pride of authorship in this bill. I feel like that we need to work together to get it established in the statutes, and so I'm delighted that you're moving forward, and thank you for your efforts.
I have one more comment to make.
Sure.
The reason I'm involved in this is because of Charles Starr, who I admire tremendously, and he and I have worked together, and I want to work with him to make this a better bill. So.
Well, we're all one happy family over here. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, and then when this bill comes, when the House Bill 3174 comes over here, Senator Starr then has an opportunity, and Senator Morissette, to sign on to that if it's not a committee bill, once we are in possession of it in the Senate. So we can do that. And Senator Starr, if you'll just keep in touch with him so that he may participate
Absolutely.
In the work group, and then I'll count on Senator Starr to keep me apprised of your progress. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Three of you very much. No one else is scheduled to testify on this bill, so I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 789. I will now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 454. Ms. Taylor.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 454 extends the tax credit qualifying period for employers who hire qualified youth under the First Break program. It increases the cap on the maximum amount of that tax credit. This does have a subsequent referral to revenue, and by the way, there is a little blank on page 2, line 7 of the bill.
A blank?
Yes, which would increase the cap.
All right, thank you. Senator Cruz, do you want to go down and join a couple other folks who want to testify?
Well, Madam Chair, I can just say briefly that I can do it from here and let the Employment Department speak to it. I think the concept is a good concept. It's dealing with at-risk youth and hopefully giving them, putting a tool in our toolbox. I don't think the tax credit has been utilized probably to the level it should have been or could have been, but that, having said that, I don't think that's a reason for it to necessarily go away. And so the thought of extending the sunset on it seems to be an appropriate move, and the reason for the blank is to allow the folks, Senator Deckert and folks in revenue, to fill it in with what they think is appropriate.
Okay. So with that, we'll hear from Ed Jasmine and Tamara Brickman. In the front row.
Chair Walker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tamara Brickman. I'm the legislative coordinator for the Employment Department, and I'm actually not here to say much of anything. I'm going to let Ed Jasmine from our Business and Employment Services programs say everything about the bill.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ed Jasmine. I'm with the State of Oregon Employment Department. I'm here to answer any questions concerning the First Break program, as well as describing the fundamentals of what services are provided through the credit. Now, having said that, the Oregon First Break program is a hiring incentive credit that serves youth ages 14 to 23 years. It's operated by the Employment Department, but the certification procedures are administered at the local level through community-based organizations. These community-based organizations are primarily nonprofit organizations, school districts, organizations that in general, if you're to identify a threat of commonality that serve youth at risk, and with respect to at-risk youth, those are defined and defined by rule through the Employment Department, but identified through the community-based organizations that actually administer the certifications, which in turn authorizes the hiring employers to claim the credit on qualified youth that are employed.
Okay. Any questions up here? Senator Starr?
Yes, can you tell us about the utilization of the credit? How has it been utilized? How many applications for credit do you know?
Madam Chair, Senator, with respect to its use, the Employment Department is on the receiving end with respect to certifications that are issued by the community-based organization, so we do have an accurate count of those certifications that have been issued. During the past four-year period, a total of 45 certifications were issued statewide to qualified high-risk youth by these community-based organization providers.
You then don't, excuse me, Chair. You've certified the youth. You don't have any information about amount of tax credit allowed to employers as a result of that.
That would be a Department of Revenue function in terms of its actual claiming. With respect to information that we have readily available, we alluding to the Employment Department, it would be the actual final copy of the cert issued. Now, with respect to claiming of the credit, that would appear on the return filed by these employers. So revenue would be the best source.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. I don't see anyone else signed up to testify. I think we're all true believers, so that made it easy for you. All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 454. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 454. Senator Starr.
Yes, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 454 to Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 454 to the Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation. Any comments?
Madam Chair, I was just wondering, although we left the blank in the bill to let revenue deal with it, I was wondering if Senator Starr would be willing to accept a friendly amendment to not fill in the blank, but to suggest that the tax credit be doubled to $2,000.
That is part of the discussion. So, Senator Starr, does anyone have a comment about that?
Since I said on revenue, I'll share that message forward.
Which is fine. I just wanted a suggestion to go forward with the bill.
So. I think I'd rather leave it a suggestion rather than fill in the blank.
Suggestion to fill in the blank with that. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's very good. I think we sent another couple of other tax credit bills over there. One Senator Morris had sent over, and who knows how many we sent. All right. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we will move that bill to revenue as stated. Close the work session on Senate Bill 454. I love counting this gavel sometimes.
You're getting good at it.
I'm getting good at it, yeah. Okay, so let me kind of regroup here. To start, okay, we've got a list.
I'll add to it.
We're going to open a public hearing on both bills, Senate Bill 560 and Senate Bill 860. And it is my goal to take people three at a time. We're going to do pro and con. And I'd sort of like you all, we have a huge list, an hour and a half. So three, thank you. So about 3 to 4 minutes. If you start getting too long-winded, I'm going to cut that down a little bit because I don't want to turn anyone away. We do have to end at 5 o'clock today. Yes, we do have to end at 5 o'clock because we're coming back at 6 o'clock. And those of us who sat in committee for 6 hours today actually need a break to eat something and lie down for a few minutes. So we will finish at 5. Senator Morissette, I'm going to call you up, and Ted Kaiser from Senator Verger's office, and Pat Burke from the Department of Ed. And that will give us our first three.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have Senate Bill 560 and Senate Bill 860 in front of you. Senate Bill 560 has the Dash 1 amendment from Senator Morissette, and I'm sure that he'll probably want to speak to that amendment. And also, in your packet, on Senate Bill 560, you have a letter from the National Confectioners Association and an associated article that was sent with that letter. You have an email from Jim Manenbach, and that's it.
Okay. Great. Well, Senator Morissette, you're on the committee, so why don't you start?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you very much for hearing this bill. I'm just going to make a few general comments because I know we have a full agenda. This is a bill that I've been interested in since 1999. I've brought it forward in three sessions. It is a no-brainer, which will pass at some point. I say that because we went through the same thing with alcohol, tobacco use, alcohol use. Now we're dealing with another substance abuse, so to speak. And that's why we call it junk food. Now, junk food is fine in the appropriate time and in the appropriate amounts, and there's no problem with that. This bill limits it while in school. I will argue against the idea that it's going to take money away from the schools, because grocers will very quickly figure out a way to package healthy foods to put in the machine. So if it's a matter of losing the machines, that's not going to happen. Distributors have already figured out how to package soft drinks that are healthy, a variety of them. So I don't see either of those, I don't see that as being a valid argument. The schools can continue to make money. The bill is fairly limited in its application, and it's phased in over a four-year period. The high school would not take place until 08. So I think it's a good bill. I think it's been worked on for 8 years. I think it's refined, and I urge that we pass this bill out and move on. Thank you.
Senator Morissette, could I ask you a question, please? What would you say to the argument that this would be a local control issue?
Well, I think that's a good argument, except that the state has a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that the 70% of the state funds are being adequately spent. It is a local control. We can make that argument. I think that we also have the responsibility at the state level. So it's a shared responsibility.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll be asking that question throughout the day. Thank you. Mr. Kaiser, do you want to go next?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing testimony on Senate Bill 860 and the related bill, Senate Bill 560. My name is Teddy Kaiser, and I'm the legislative assistant for Senator Joanne Berger. She represents District 5, Coastal District, and I'm here speaking on her behalf. She had wanted to be here to speak, but unfortunately, circumstances beyond her concern, her control, have kept her from testifying today. I wanted to speak just briefly on two points before turning it over to the many experts that are in the room today from across Oregon who wanted to speak on this issue. First, I wanted to talk about the general purpose of these bills. They really go to the very essence of what schools are about. Schools are for teaching our students healthy lifestyles, healthy for the mind and healthy for the body. In an era where our foods are more pre-processed, mixed, denatured, they have more additives, even hormones, artificial flavorings and colorings than ever before, and the time between when products are made or picked from the vine and when they're actually eaten has gotten more and more. We also are living in an era where students are more obese than ever before and more inactive than ever before. And this bill really speaks to every aspect of the life of our students, in that it speaks to the general health of our students. And more specifically, in terms of schools, students who live healthy lifestyles and eat healthy are more focused and participate more in our schools, perform better in our classrooms. So we really must not allow our schools to be the source of unhealthy foods, to allow our schools to become promoters, to become teachers of unhealthy lifestyles. That is why we have presented Senate Bill 860, which is really a very simple bill, and we purposely made it simple. It really deals with just the worst offenders of junk food, and the related bill 560, which deals with more foods and is phased in over a longer period of time. And we really feel these two bills work well in concert with each other. My last.
Kaiser, I'm
sorry.
Can I interrupt you? I can't let this one escape.
Okay.
What do you mean by worst offenders of junk food? Could you define that?
Sure. The way this bill defines it is by what the USDA defines as foods of minimal nutritional value. And we felt that for these kinds of foods, we didn't want to try to come up with a formula that we should allow the experts at the USDA to come up with that form.
Okay.
So, and my last point, I wanted to address a misnomer about these bills in terms of vending machines and contracts. Senate Bill 860 does not prohibit vending machines or contracts. It allows the contracts to go to the end of their terms, and new contracts can be made as long as the food providers use their healthier options. All of these food providers have healthier options. And as some have felt that schools would lose money from these bills if they were passed. But because these food providers have other options they can use, then you look at other areas that have instituted these kinds of rules and policies, there usually is a short period where people are getting used to the new foods, and there's on the order of a handful of weeks where sales drop off. But then the sales come back to their previous levels, and in many cases have actually exceeded the levels in the past. And if you think about it, the students' money to buy these foods comes from their parents, and when their parents realize that their school is committed to healthy foods, they are more willing to allow their sons and daughters to have the money to buy these foods. It is our belief that vending machines and snack bars are actually good. Studies have shown that students who eat snacks during the day are 80 to 90% more likely to participate in classes. It's more a matter of what those foods are. We cannot allow our schools to become candy stores. We cannot allow our schools to become obligated to promote unhealthy foods. And that is why we urge you to support Senate Bill 860 and its related bill, Senate Bill 8560. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am open for questions.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Kaiser.
Thank you.
We'll hear from Mr. Burke now.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Pat Burke. I'm the Chief Policy Officer of the Department of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to address both Senate Bill 560 and 860 this afternoon. You are in an unenviable position in that there are a number of significant forces at play here. The first, of course, is what is in the best interest of the health, nutrition, and physical education and development of our young people. This is a goal that I think everybody in this room shares. It certainly is one that the Department of Education shares. I think the question is, what is the best way of getting there? I think Senator Morissette expressed much better than I a concern that I personally have, which is if we are only looking at a legislative solution, as we have in the past over a couple of sessions, what happens if that solution isn't effective? Are we just stuck in neutral, and are we not going to move forward on this? On the other hand, I'm also very aware of the potential fiscal impact on school districts, particularly in support of activities, athletics, and other types of student programs that tend to benefit from sales in school. And there's a third issue, which is the potential fiscal impact of complying with some of the information. And I'll talk a little bit more about this in a moment. 560 adds an additional layer of state regulation on top of existing regulation, and in advance by a year and a half of new federal regulation. So there's a considerable amount of regulatory activity going on here. And all of that has implications for local district staff to have the people to do the work, calculate the meals, look at menu differences, changing their meal preparation practices and student serving practices and so on. So this is a very complicated area. As a way through that area, what I have provided to the committee is the public view of a task force report that will be presented to the Oregon State Board of Education at its April meeting. So, Madam Chair, I would exercise a little bit of caution. We are giving it to the committee because of the importance of this bill, but this report has not yet been submitted to the state board, and it is a report to the state board, although board members know that I am giving it to the committee today. And I'd like to at least suggest that however the regulatory and legal debate pans out, that I would hope we could, as a community, and by community I mean not only school people, but local city governments, county governments, park bureaus, and a variety of community-based organizations, could commit to a community goal of providing adequate nutrition, good, healthy nutrition, an opportunity for solid health education, and expanded and abundant opportunity for physical education for all youth in the state. Now, what the task force did beginning last August, and for your information, if you look at page 5 of the document I provided, the task force members are listed, and as you can see, it's a spectrum of both health and student nutrition advocates, members of industry, members of school boards, school administrators, and parent organizations. This organization, or this task force, met from August until about a week ago, and spent a lot of time reviewing the research in this area. We reviewed the current legislative landscape in every state in the United States. We looked at a variety of reports from experts in the field, both here in Oregon and from around the country. And as we proceeded through that work, you can see in the section on student health a summary of some of those findings. We further then reviewed what we called the policy landscape. So we know that there is a body of research in the area. What do we know about policy? We know, for example, that there are existing federal regulations regarding foods of minimal nutritional value and other foods that are sold in schools. In particular, I would like to call the committee's attention to page 12, which was the passage in June of 2004 of Public Law 108-265. This was the reauthorization of the Child Nutrition Act. And this is a very important piece of legislation that school districts are currently facing. For districts to continue to seek reimbursement for the meals served under the school breakfast and lunch program, by June of 2006, every district in the state receiving reimbursement must have its own local plan and policy that includes the 5 bullets that you see on page 12. The local district must establish goals for its nutrition education program, its physical activity program, and other school-based activities to promote wellness. The district must provide nutrition guidelines in its policy for all foods available in each school campus. It must provide assurance that guidelines for reimbursable meals shall not be less restrictive than the regulations issued by the Department of Agriculture. In other words, the school district must comply with the regulations established by the Department of Agriculture. A plan for measuring the implementation of a local wellness policy, including a designation of a person or persons in the district to monitor its implementation, and a plan to involve parents, students, and representatives of the school food service program, school board administrators, and the public in the development of that policy. As an agency, it's our responsibility to provide technical assistance to districts as they prepare for the implementation of that policy. You also see that we spent some time talking about the financial factors here. Frankly, the financial factors are somewhat difficult to get a handle on because these are individual contracts established in local school boards. They do not have to report to us, for example, how much money they receive in a contract. So that is an area, in my opinion, that needs some additional work. We do know that there are some common areas of contracts, and that we report on page 16. We know that most contracts severely limit vending operations at the elementary level. We know at the middle school level that time regulations and product mixes are standard parts that we find in most contracts. And at the high school level in particular, this is where the area of a la carte sales and other types of food sales that are not part of a standard meal program, standard reimbursable meal program, come into play in a contract, not just from a vendor, but from sales that the district itself provides in its meal service program. We then, after reviewing all of that material, spent several meetings, actually more than several, this took several months of work, looking at policy recommendations that we would make to the State Board of Education. Those policy recommendations fall into three categories: policy, curriculum and instruction, and recommendations for community action. In addition, we had a subcommittee that provided a great deal of research in this area, and in order to keep this document at a reasonable length, we decided not to print those documents, but at the end of this document you can find the web page access to all of that research that went into this. So in the policy recommendations, you'll see that I'm not going to take you through all 33 of them. There are 33 specific recommendations. We will review these with the State Board. But in the policy area, the main thrust is that each district must begin this process of establishing its own local policy. We've provided guidance for what should be contained in that policy. It's our intention as an agency to provide technical assistance to school districts in order to comply with the new federal regulations. We also ask that the State Board of Education initiate with the Governor's Office a statewide interagency collaborative to utilize our existing resources and structure to address the issue of childhood obesity and nutrition for the purpose of developing interagency strategies. Let me reemphasize that. You probably have already seen the governor's effort to reduce hunger among children in our state. A wide interagency collaborative involving Human Services, the Department of Education, and other state agencies to expand food availability to our students, particularly during the summer. We think that such an initiative on childhood obesity and nutrition would be a welcome addition. We also recommend that teachers receive appropriate training in their pre-service program for nutrition, wellness, and physical education. A concern of mine, if I can speak personally, is that elementary licenses license a teacher to teach physical education, and we know currently that there are not adequate physical education specialists to put a specialist in every school. So the result of that is you have more teachers doing their own physical education. So there is a fundamental question, I believe, and how well prepared is our existing workforce to deliver that? The obvious other way of looking at that is, do we have the financial resources to provide more specialists? Either way, there is a fiscal impact. In the community action, I won't go through all of those, but we recommend actions related to community organizations, the school staff, administrators, and parents. There's a variety of recommendations in each of those, and basically as you read them, what begins to emerge is a process for community engagement that includes schools, local communities, and community-based organizations, and the parent community. And finally, a set of recommendations involving curriculum and instruction. The Department of Education has recently revised its health and nutrition common curriculum goals and academic content standards. These include standards related to health, nutrition, and physical education. And it is the role of the agency to work with local school districts to make sure that those standards are addressed in our instructional program. So, Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify. Let me publicly, if you don't mind, Madam Chair, sitting behind me are a number of people who participated in that task force. I would like the legislature to know that we are blessed in this state to have some really outstanding advocates, business leaders, and school personnel who care deeply about this issue, and I'm personally very grateful for all of their help as we went through this task force process. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. And actually, I'd like, if anyone served on this task force, if you could just stand up so we could see who all the wonderful participants were. Wow. Thank you very much, because task forces, sometimes we have a little joke around here that we throw a task force together when we don't want to make decisions. But really, task forces can do some really great and wonderful things, and what Mr. Burke has just shared with us has shown that your efforts have not gone unnoticed, so we really appreciate it. Mr. Burke, I need to ask you just a couple questions. As you know, since you've been listening to me down in Ways and Means, I really want to see improvement in the school lunch program. I think you indicated that the federal government was revising their guidelines this summer and making those better, I hope, so that chocolate milk is not considered one of the food groups. One of the things that I asked or that I discovered was that not all school districts in the state participate in the federal lunch program because some find it just too difficult to work with, so they just fund it out of their own general fund budget.
That's correct.
So the question then would be, if the federal government is now going to require that everyone develop a wellness policy and do all of these other things, it only applies to those districts that have a school lunch program that uses federal funds. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct. As far as I know, we do have Joyce Doherty and Heidi Dupuy in the audience, who are the two administrators in our agency who manage that program. They might be able to give you more specific information. But yes, it is true that not all districts in the state participate in the federal meal reimbursement program, and the new federal regulations apply primarily to the districts that receive that reimbursement.
And then the second question, because I always ask leading questions like someone who sits around lawyers too much, is how many of those districts do we have that do not participate in the program?
Let me turn to the people who know.
You'll have to come forward. I'm sorry. We have a record to maintain, and so if you state your name, please.
Heidi Dupuy, the Department of Education.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, the schools that do not participate in the National School Lunch Program are the very smallest of our school districts. There are 17 of them that do not participate in any federal program, and there are 5 that do participate in the special milk program. So they are providing milk to their students along with whatever meal they're either providing or the students are bringing from home, depending on their situation.
Now, I came from a small high school in Reedsport, Oregon, and they had fabulous lunches. So,
and they still do.
Who wanted to eat at the Dairy Queen when you could eat lunch at school like that? And then joining you to answer
Madam questions. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Joyce Doherty, and I direct the child nutrition programs, which include the National School Lunch, School Breakfast, as well as child care and the Summer Food Service Program.
Okay, and your answer would be pretty much the same?
Yes.
Okay, terrific. Thank you. Any questions from up here? All right, well, thank you for coming forward and clarifying that for me. And I have to break a rule already. I was going to go pro-con, but I've seen Representative Tomei joined us, and I know she has to get back to committee, so we're going to take you out of order, and then we're going to go to 3 people who are opposed to this concept.
Yeah. Chair Walker, members of the committee. I'm State Representative Carolyn Tomei from House District 41, which is Milwaukee and Southeast Portland. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today in favor of House Bill, or Senate Bill 560, which would eliminate the sale of candy, carbonated sodas, and fried pastries in our schools. And before I go on with my written testimony, I just want to let you know that when I was first elected 4.5 years ago, I was fortunate enough to be able to go to Washington, D.C. for a presentation for new women legislators. And one of the presenters there talked about obesity and what a problem it was and what a continuing and growing problem it was. Every time I've gone to the NCSL conference, any conference, obesity has come up as one of the hugest problems, and especially obesity among children. So this is why I think this bill, both these bills, are great, and I would really encourage you to pass them. Childhood obesity is a growing epidemic with long-term health consequences for individuals and for our state. I firmly believe state policies should encourage healthy lifestyle choices for our children. That includes tobacco prevention education, regular physical activity, and healthy choices for our diet. Senate Bill 560 would eliminate junk food from being offered in our schools during lunch hours. This fall, I attended a presentation of National Conference of State Legislators on Childhood Obesity. They reported the results of recent surveys that found 75% of beverage options and 85% of snack foods offered in school vending machines were of poor nutritional quality. The most prevalent options are soda, imitation fruit drinks, candy, chips, cookies, and snack cakes. This high prevalence of junk food in school vending machines and behind the lunch counter does not support students' ability to make healthy food choices. Senate Bill 560 does not ban vending machines in schools, nor does it limit revenue a school district can realize when contracting with the vendor. What the bill does is to reform what can be sold. National School Meals Program and the school's breakfast program already have adopted nutritional guidelines that apply to school meals, but these guidelines do not apply to food sold outside the meals program. That is vending machines, school stores, a la carte bars. Senate Bill 560 requires all food sold during the school day meet these existing nutritional standards. It allows a reasonable phase-in time to help school districts work with vendors to help implement these healthier product offerings. Lawmakers in 40 states have introduced bills aimed at strengthening school nutrition standards. California has limited the items available to students during the school day. Arkansas banned in-school access to vending machines. Texas will implement strict guidelines on school snack offerings. Many local school boards have already taken action, including Philadelphia, New York City, Los Angeles, and Chicago. And now is the time for Oregon to follow suit. Colleagues, I urge your support for Senate Bill 560. And Chair Walker, I know you're going to ask me about local control. And as a former mayor, you know I support local control. But I feel it's incumbent upon the legislature to make sure that our children, if we're paying for the education, we need to make sure that it's a good education, and that includes educating them regarding food choices. And I know that one of the reasons that schools are more likely now to have vending machines is that we are not adequately financially supporting the schools. And again, I think it's incumbent on us to financially support our schools.
Thank you.
So thank you for hearing me out and for letting me speak.
Any questions? All right. Thank you. I see you are a sponsor of Senate Bill 560, if I think I've read my notes correctly. Thank you. Okay, we're going to switch to the people who are opposed to this concept. Robin Stromberg, you're from Grants Pass. Why don't you come up? And Janet Beer and Carol McLeod. And Robin, you served on the task force.
Yes, I did.
Good for you. Thank you. Do you want to start out?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Madam Chair and committee members, My name is Robin Stromberg. I'm currently the president of the Oregon School Nutrition Association and also food service director for Grants Pass School District Number 7. And the Oregon School Nutrition Association is opposed to the bills that are currently being presented. And the primary reasons is that they're not coordinated with other health, school health programs, the financial impact without planned alternatives, does not follow recommended guidelines for establishing policies and standards in the 2004 Child Nutrition Reauthorization Act that you just heard, and insufficient Oregon school case studies. And for the past year, I've had the opportunity to go to a lot of school districts, be involved with the task force, and I saw a lot of excellent school food service programs. And where I personally run into problems is trying to evaluate whether the food sold in vending machines or a la carte is nutritious or non-nutritious. Is the financial impact to do the change? For my district personally, is we're an open campus. I'll use the high school as an example. We have 1,900 students. We have two lunch periods, which is 35 minutes apiece. And our seating capacity in our cafeteria is 450 seats. I've been there for 5 years. When we first started out, we were probably feeding 30% of the students there. The rest were going off campus, and we changed the food program quite a bit. We implemented a huge a la carte program, and that involved doing box lunches, grab and go, and we're now up to 55% of the students are participating in our cafeteria. This year with the a la carte, more than double the prices for those entrees. You can get a healthy food choice item in our reimbursable meal line for $1.75. If you go to the a la carte line and they're picking up chicken strips and chips and juice and we're charging $3.50, we'll sell 100 of those because those same students used to go off campus. Those students have available within two blocks two convenience stores that receive a lot of business. Within 1 mile of our school site, and again, this is open campus, we have 17 fast food operations. Our concern at the time was the number of students that were leaving campus, yet be able to handle them within our own program with the cafeteria. To put in the severe restrictions on the nutritional value would deter my income. Financially okay, I could probably get by with working with those losses, but I look at what's implications down the line or for other school districts when I'm seeing 30% cost increase with insurances and I drop $10,000 in my a la carte sales or I drop $16,000 in my bottled water sales to meet the criteria. You know, it all adds up to be a financial burden on my school district and my sites. In turn, the cafeteria currently supports 4 staff members in the a la carte areas, and a reduction of those incomes would affect directly onto those labor hours. Is it beneficial for the net outcome of our students' health? Probably so, but at the time when we have new HACCP regulations, new reauthorization regulations, where do we find the time to put towards educating our students, the staff, the parents? It's all a financial burden to us. And I agree wholeheartedly that, you know, something needs to be done with obesity, but also it should be done at the local level to organize all those entities that are involved. The school districts that I talked to in the past week, Umatilla, Baker, Portland, Corvallis have all seen a big drop in revenues when they started this out. And just like I heard earlier, yeah, those incomes come back, but not for the initial 1 month to 6 months that we did this change. There is a drop in income. The one school district could be affected up to $30,000 to $40,000, and that generally went into the general fund to help support educational assistance. The issues of that I heard earlier about the quality of foods that go into those vending machines, there's been a big change, and you can put in nice quality nutritious items in there. But again, if it's a closed campus, you can work with those students that work with that or buy those foods. But open campus, it's a change. Those students do have the ability to leave campus. We do have the atmosphere of be considered a school serving healthy foods, but are we doing more harm with those students leaving and not providing the education first? Allow us to develop our wellness committee, implement the changes, and meet the standards that are coming up in 2006, July 1. The you mentioned chocolate milk, and I deal with that every week, chocolate milk. This is the first year that we've had non-fat chocolate milk available, and just to give you an example of what I go through just on one issue of chocolate milk, I meet with teachers who are adamant about the sugar content in milk. I hear from dietitians on one end that says, well, don't worry about it because the calcium is kind of like a sedative. There's such a wide range of what dietitians say to me. When I talk to those same staff, you know, what? How serious are we about the sugar levels? Well, do we give 1 ounce of syrup with our French toast or hot cakes? You know, and they say, well, that's okay. Well, what about our cinnamon rolls? Everyone loves those cinnamon. Everyone says leave the cinnamon rolls alone. And that's because it's a favorite by adults. So the point I'm getting at is we have a whole lot of education to do with staff. We have a lot of education to do with home. It's a total program, and we can do the restrictions on food service and address food service as being the problem with obesity, but it's the total picture we need to look at and to do it in a coordinated method of local control and looking at our financial per site. And when I looked up success stories in Oregon, I couldn't find any because they haven't been really publicized or I've heard some negatives. When I look outside Oregon, yeah, there is success stories, but they don't address whether it was open or closed campus, whether the school district was funded by the food service, funded by general fund, or whether they were self-operating on their own funds. There was a whole lot of questions. So at this time, you know, with all those open questions and not enough information, that's why our executive board elected not to support these bills until there's further information.
Thank you, Mr. Stromberg. I appreciate your testimony. I'm going to have to ask the rest of you to shorten it up to about 2.5 minutes now because we have 21 people to testify. Okay, great. So introduce yourself, please.
Thank you, Chairman Walker and members of the committee. I'm Janet Beer, and I am a registered dietitian. I am also the food service director for the Tiger Tualatin School District. In addition to that, I am the president of the Oregon Child Nutrition Coalition, which is a food buying group of 80 school districts in the state that represent 215,000 students. I have personally spoken to 26 of the members about Senate Bill 560, and I have emailed the remainder. The members agree that childhood obesity is a serious problem, both for this state and for the country. They also agree that schools really should be part of the solution to this problem. But not one of them have said to me, this bill is the right approach, this bill will be cost neutral, or that this bill will actually educate children in our schools. What they tell me is it will not teach children how to make better food choices. It denies our districts and communities the right to develop our own standards, and that it will have a serious fiscal impact on schools. There are only 6 districts in the state, to my knowledge, that have dietitians on their staff. The registered dietitians at Corvallis, Lake Oswego, Portland, and Newburgh schools all agree with me that these are arbitrary and extreme standards that are not supported by the research. This bill, when actually applied to the products we offer and sell at school, results in nutritional nonsense. I emailed the members of the committee a chart of 36 entrees I currently sell a la carte in Tiger 12 in schools. Only 14 of those items could be sold if this bill, Senate Bill 560, were to pass. Some of the items that become junk food or evil, not allowed, include unbreaded chicken tenders. I can sell a chicken patty, but I can't put it in a bun. I can sell a hamburger patty, again, no bun. I cannot sell a bean and beef burrito that is commodity processed by the Oregon Department of Education. No macaroni and cheese, no quesadilla, no grilled cheese sandwich, no peanut butter sandwich, no low-fat pizza. I cannot even sell a whole wheat bean burrito that we make that is an excellent product, vegetarian, low-fat, but it will not be allowed under this bill. Congress has given schools a gift by mandating that we develop wellness policies and that we involve our communities, our students, our teachers, our administrators, a great number of people. I urge you, let school districts come up with their own wellness programs. Let us make those adapt and work for the students in our communities. Please do not pass Senate Bill 560 or 860. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's very succinct and very informative. I appreciate it.
Madam Chairman, committee members, I'm Carol McLeod. I am also with the Oregon Child Nutrition Coalition, and I work for Newburgh Public Schools. I'm a registered dietitian. I'm licensed in this state, and I've worked in school nutrition for the last 17 years. And I want to echo and repeat again what Janet had to say about the fact that Senate Bill 560 micromanages each individual food item, making it difficult for us to do our real job. And what we really want to do is produce results. Everyone in this room, the pros and the cons in this room, want to see results. We want to reduce childhood obesity. We want children to get the take-home message to go home, not just at school, and make healthy choices. When you look at what the experts at the CDC have done, they have published some guidelines recently shown to prevent childhood obesity. These speak to a coordinated school health program, that it needs to be at the local level, it needs to have policy, nutrition education curriculum, instruction to students to encourage participation, integration of food service and nutrition education, training for school staff, community and family involvement, and program evaluation. In fact, they did a study with over 5,000 fifth graders, squirrely little buggers that they are, and they broke them into three different categories. They had schools with no nutrition policies, schools that only had healthy menu options, and schools with coordinated healthy eating programs. And lo and behold, when they compared them, the schools with the coordinated program showed lower obesity rates, higher intake of fruits and vegetables, less calories from fat, higher nutritional quality intake, higher levels of physical activity, and less sitting around. But when they looked at the other two schools, the schools with no programs or the schools only with healthy eating options, they found none of those things had happened. In fact, they were almost identical in the results, the fact that they were not getting the take-home message to the children. So I also would urge you to support the mandate that we already have in the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Act. Support what schools really need to do is get the take-home message to children in an integrated way. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator
Morsett. Yeah, thank you. I also had bills for three sessions that would have taught nutrition in the schools and would have done a coordinated approach. That's even more expensive. So the people who don't want to pay for that are against it. And it's an unfunded mandate. And it's frustrating because I agree that your approach is the best approach. But that's not acceptable either, I'm sorry to say.
Senator Morsett, I really feel with what we are currently mandated from the federal government with the child nutrition programs, that's something that we're going to seriously have to look at. And I guess that's my bottom line is I want to get the message home. I just don't want it the 6 hours a day while we have them in class.
All right, thank you. Thank all three of you. Okay, we're going to hear from the pro side and then the con side. So Dr. Shiver, Jonah Edelman, and Dr. Mel Cohn, and then after that we'll hear from Kathy Kaiser, Eric Forrest, and Erica Hetfeld.
2.5 minutes, folks. And if you have written testimony, we know how to read. We can do that. So if you just want to hit the highlights. Mr. Edelman, do you want to go first since you're sitting there and ready to roll?
Great. Jonah Edelman, for the record, Executive Director of Stand for Children. Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify today in favor of Senate Bill 560. I know you've heard already extensive evidence on the serious and growing problem of childhood obesity, and that you passed Senate Bill 228, recently establishing a statewide standard for participation in physical activity in our schools. And unfortunately, we know that with continuing budget shortfalls, increased PE is not likely to be realized in many districts anytime soon. Senate Bill 560 offers you a revenue-neutral opportunity to take action that will directly improve the health of thousands of students right away. Senate Bill 560 sets reasonable nutritional standards on foods and beverages sold to students throughout the school day. Rather than eliminating student options and revenue from vending machines, this approach replaces junk food with healthy choices such as string cheese, granola bars, pretzels, fresh fruit, water, milk, and juice. A USDA study of income data from 17 schools, I think this is very important to note, reported that 12 schools increased their revenue when they replaced junk food with healthy food, and 4 reported no change in revenue. So, Chair Walker and Senator Cruz, those of you concerned with the revenue impact, I think that study is important to look at.
Are those local schools in Oregon?
I don't believe they were local schools in Oregon.
Okay. They were just some...
It's a USDA study of sample of 17 schools. But I'll get that clarification for you. Some argue against this approach by defending local control, so we just want to address that. We set statewide standards for teaching and learning. We set statewide standards for a wide range of health and safety protections. And you just passed a statewide standard for minimum PE requirements. In addition, the state is on the hook right now for over $700 million to pay for the costs related to obesity. And since the state is a major provider of health care, this is very relevant given that 70 to 80% of kids who are obese end up being obese in their adult lives and costing the state significantly. Some argue that it's the parents' job to teach their children about healthy nutritional choices. And I just want to note that the parent leaders of Stand for Children, who unanimously voted to endorse Senate Bill 560, would tell you that parents need all the help that they can get. The average American child views 40,000 commercials per year. The average teen currently spends over 20 hours per week online and or watching television, almost as much time as they spend in the classroom. Over $15 billion a year is spent on youth marketing annually. So our children are being bombarded by enticements to make unhealthy choices. In our view, the last place they need more encouragement to consume sugar-laden, high-fat junk food is in our schools. Senate Bill 560 does not outlaw donuts in the state of Oregon. It doesn't dictate what students eat at home or in after-school activities. All it does is make sure that our students have the same nutritional options during the school day as their peers in Washington and California, which have already passed similar legislation. Our schools should offer a healthy environment where children learn guidelines and habits that will make them lifelong learners and productive members of our community. There's no reason to turn our backs when we can take action today to make schools a healthier environment for schools across the state. On behalf of Stand for Children's 1,400 members and the 550,000 school children in the state, I encourage you to pass Senate Bill 560. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edelman.
My name is Scott Schieber. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for listening to us. I'm a family practitioner in McMinnville, Oregon. I have 4 children, the oldest of which is in 3rd grade, so these topics are relevant to me. And I'm not a part of any committee members or anything else. I just kind of came down here because I'd heard that we're talking about school lunches, and that's important, both as a father and as a physician. I'm kind of where the rubber meets the road kind of guy, and I know we've got a lot of task force and everything's looking into this issue. I can tell you while we're talking and while we're trying to decide on the best approach, I'm seeing the kids in the office, the ones that are heavy. And this isn't just a problem with kids walking around that are overweight. These lead to medical problems. We're seeing type 2 diabetes in kids that we, it used to never be. We'd see that in children, and they have sleep disorders and asthma and all kinds of things. And I just want to impress upon you that this is a problem. This is a growing problem. I'm not sure how long some of these acts that I've been listening to, these national standards, have been in place, but something isn't happening completely because the numbers are just rising astronomically. And I think the biggest support, reasons for support I can give for this bill is the problem is growing. I think something needs to be done. I've heard a lot of talk about educating children. I can tell you that modeling just in and of itself is good. If you show kids that, hey, you know, I can be satisfied with these kinds of food choices, that is taken home to their parents. I don't think you have to sit kids in a room and say, okay, we're going to have a class on how to make proper eating choices. When they see that they can be happy with water for a meal, and they can be happy with certain foods, I think that's a take-home message in and of itself. That's a cost-free way to do it. And my goal is going to be to impress that upon you and have the shortest speech, so I will end it there.
Thank you, Dr. Schubert. Dr. Cohn?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn. I'm the state epidemiologist here for the Department of Human Services, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 560. I'm not going to repeat many of the very accurate and wonderful things that have already been said about this bill. I just want to emphasize a few points. In the interest of brevity, I will stick to those. The first is that as a public health hazard, obesity is among the leading ones and the most rapidly growing ones that we have to confront today. And with this bill, I think the legislature has an opportunity to really take the lead in addressing this issue here in Oregon. The perfect should not be the enemy of the good, and while a more comprehensive program, as Senator Morissette has already described, would be a wonderful thing to see in place, this is a very important and worthwhile first step. The other thing that I want to add to the testimony that's already been given is that a variety of groups have stepped forward and called for the development of these kinds of standards. And I would even venture to say that this kind of approach is really quite widely accepted. The Surgeon General, the USDA, as Mr. Edelman referred already, the Institute of Medicine, and others have called for the development of these kinds of standards. And I think we need to take this issue, because it is such an important problem, every bit as seriously as we do the other issues about which we have fully supported and passed standards at the state level. So with that, I'm going to stop. Be happy to answer any questions.
Dr. Conan, just for the record, we have two written statements up here. 860, you're neutral on because it's a step in the right direction but doesn't go far enough. And 560, you support.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Any questions from the panel or from my senators up here? Okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming. Thank you. Okay, so we are going to hear from Kathy Kaiser, Eric Forrest, and Erica Hetfeld. And then the next pro panel will be Dr. Jim Lace, Darlene Kane, and Noelle Dobson. And as soon as you get seated, if somebody just takes the mic and gets going, that'd be great. Hello, Mr. Forrest. He comes from Eugene, but you look too tan to be coming from Eugene right now. I'm sorry to tell you that.
Actually, came from Disneyland.
Okay. Well, you know, they had an awful lot of rain there this year, so. All right, thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kathy Kaiser, and I live in Kaiser, and I'm a mom. I know there's lots of K's in there. I have three sons, a 20-year-old who goes to Oregon State. I've got a 5-year-old, and I also have a 10-month-old, and I'm done. So I have the whole spectrum here. I'm area manager for the Coca-Cola Bottling Company of Oregon. Our local bottling company has over 500 employees that live and raise their families in the local communities in which we do business. Our facilities are all over the state, Bend, North North Bend, Eugene, Medford, the Dalles, Wilsonville, Tualatin. And I'm also immediate past president of the Oregon Soft Drink Association, the statewide trade association that represents 17 local soft drink bottlers with 27 facilities and communities throughout the state. I testify today in opposition to State Senate Bill 560 and Senate Bill 860. First of all, the Coca-Cola Bottling Company of Oregon and all local soft drink bottlers throughout the state offer a wide variety of beverages in schools. Schools with whom we have relationships already, we recognize a lot of folks in the room, and that we offer water, juices, sports drinks, dairy-based drinks, and teas in vending machines in addition to carbonated regular and diet drinks. We have a huge variety of offerings, not just carbonated sugar soft drinks. And in the last 2 years, the industry's portfolio has been ever-expanding. For instance, my company now offers 5 additional low-calorie lemonades and several additional diet drinks, including diet tea, and those offerings will continue to expand. Under these bills, such beverages and diet carbonated beverages would be banned. That just doesn't make a lot of sense. Second, consumption, you know, and I think this is a big misnomer. Consumption of carbonated soft drinks in schools is minimal. A recently completed survey covering 97 school districts and over 233,000 students, 80% of the total school enrollment in Oregon and every major population district in the state shows that on average in 2004, in schools which our industry does business, students consumed less than 1 12-ounce can of sugar carbonated soft drinks per week. That's not one per day, it's one per week. Third, presented the wide variety of choices, students are consuming almost as many non-carbonated beverages, including water, 100% juices, and sports drinks, as they are carbonated beverages. Fully 40% of beverages consumed in Oregon are diet beverages, water, and juices. So that's a high number. We respect parents, teachers, and students' decisions to make the beverage choices for their schools. We respect individual choice, and as a mom, I and we think parents, not the government, should have the right to decide what their children can or can't eat. There are good and bad lifestyles, let's face it. They're not good and bad foods. Obesity is a very complex problem, as we've heard from everybody that has come up here. There's no easy solutions. Obviously, clearly, a lack of physical activity plays a primary role. Other factors include one, environment, dietary habits, and time spent in front of the television or computer screen. It's most important to stress more daily exercise and a balanced diet. Blaming particular foods won't help the obesity problem. The fact is that young and old alike need to adhere to the tried and true principle of everything in moderation. Soft drinks are simply a beverage choice, and as I indicated earlier, students are given and are making responsible choices and consuming a wide variety of beverages. The Coca-Cola Bottling Company of Oregon has a long-standing tradition of supporting youth development and education, as well as physical activity and a healthy, active lifestyle. And we believe local businesses, like local soft drink bottlers, should partner with schools in their communities by providing support for academic and athletic programs. Supporting youth in education is part of being a responsible local business. Local soft drink bottlers in Oregon, members of the Oregon Soft Drink Association, and our industry employees have demonstrated a strong commitment to local communities and local schools for many decades. From scholarships and employee mentoring programs to educational grants, these responsible business partners have generated supplemental funds to help school districts with activities like music programs, the production of yearbooks, and school newspapers, instructional materials, field trips, art and theater programs. I could go on and on and on. Local soft drink bottlers help promote physical activity in schools as well. We are asked on a daily basis to help the schools. There's a lot of scenarios where the schools are coming directly to us and they want our help. And I think that sometimes we lose sight of the fact of how many things the local bottling companies do for our education system. In conclusion, proper physical and nutrition education and a healthy, active lifestyle Through athletic programs and activities, not food bans, are the key to weight control. The state should not legislate eating habits. Parents and local schools should be the ones to determine what students should be eating. I have a 5-year-old son, Davis, and he asked me, he said, I have him right now in swimming, and I also have him in t-ball. And he said, Mommy, why do we always have to exercise? Because currently I'm training for the Hood to Coast relay race. Never done it before. I'm 39 years old. I look at that, and I said to Davis, you know, we need to eat properly. We need food. Our bodies need food, water, and exercise. And that's why we exercise, Davis, and that's why we do these things. And I think it's got to start with the parents. It can't just be the sole responsibility of the schools, and I believe it's got to be a local decision. Current law permits that, and that's where it should stay. As a mom, I promote physical activity and good nutrition with my children, and they are healthy and active. I want them to be able to make decisions not only about what beverages they consume, but also about other issues. If there's anything I can do, it's to teach my children to make good decisions, as we all should, because we're not going to be around all the time. As I know with my 20-year-old, we've got to teach them to make good decisions. So these high school kids that can go off campus and all of that, let's just hope we're teaching them at home to make good decisions. Frankly, I hope that happens with all the decisions they face in their lives, because this is a rather trivial one in the scheme of things in long term, but hopefully they can make good decisions. I urge committee members to vote no on Senate Bills 560 and 860. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kaiser. Mr. Forrest, I'm curious to hear from you as the newest member of the Eugene School Board. Tell us what the school board thinks.
I'm not here speaking as a school board member.
I know. You're here probably from Pepsi-Cola bottling, but you're also a school board member. This is a question I was asking myself today. Has the Eugene School Board taken a position on this issue? I know it was under discussion.
Right now, in terms of the Eugene 4J School Board, their biggest thing right now has been the access and options issue that we're dealing with our schools and school choice. Now that we, at this point, in April, we're hoping to wrap up a lot of those decisions, and I know coming up in May, what we've been talking about is this will be directly on our plate in terms of how we're going to address it and where we move forward as a district.
Okay.
We've had some conversations. They've had some previously as a group. I've had some over coffee, and I got hit with that when I first was selected to be on the board. How do you stand on that? And I said, certainly, you know, it's ripe for a conflict of interest. I certainly have opinions. I'm happy to share them, and one would imagine that I will have to step away from a vote situation when it does come
up. Okay, and I guess I should have you state your name for the record, even though I know who you are, not everyone in TV land does. So, and remember, we have about 2.5 minutes for each of you.
I'll keep it under that. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Forrest. I'm Vice President of MLF Group. It's a family-owned Pepsi franchisee. We operate in Eugene, Bend, Coos Bay, Newport, Roseburg areas and the counties that surround those. We employ about 350 people in those areas. I currently have 3 elementary age children, kindergartner, a second grader, and a fifth grader. And as was mentioned, I'm also a member of the Eugene 4J School Board and am the current president of the Oregon Soft Drink Association. A copy of my written testimony has been handed out as I speak. I won't go over that in detail, and I will just hit 4 major points here and hopefully wrap it up here in about a minute. As has been stated, obesity is a complex problem, and there is no easy solution. We've, as a society, have been working our way towards this head right now. However, I believe blaming soft drinks just as well as outlawing pizza would not solve the problem. The fact, in young and old, is the tried and true policy of everything in moderation. Calories in, calories out. Any policy that does not increase physical activity will fail in its efforts to reverse the rising obesity rates. And in fact, the University of North Carolina, using 20-year data provided by the CDC, has shown that calorie intake has remained relatively steady over the last 20 years. However, activity is down 13%. Since it's been brought up as a school board member, I must say that anything that is done and is passed down, I heard the terminology unfunded mandate. In terms of unfunded mandates, the biggest one right now to me is physical education in the schools. Having grown up in the Roseburg area, I remember having to take 3 years of high school physical education. Right now, there certainly is no requirement to that end. Also, I heard about physical education in the grade schools, and in fact, my school has made the choice to cut funding in terms of overall teachers to have a funded physical education position, but there, in fact, we have 34 to 35 kids in each elementary classroom. So if we're going to address this issue, we need to address physical education, because activity is also a past board member of Kids Sports, which is basically the de facto provider of athletics in the Eugene Springfield area. It's an organization that's struggling for funding on its own and basically has been handed by the 4J school district all responsibility for activity in the area, and it's not good enough. Kids need these opportunities. Parents, point number two, parents, not the government, should decide what their children eat and drink. Local Oregon soft drink bottlers respect the choices of parents, teachers, and students, especially in the high school area where students have to take on much larger decisions of consequence in their daily life, and this is one opportunity for them to use decision-making criteria, along with good fact-based teaching, as has been discussed. And also, I think a key point has been mentioned is most campuses at high school are open campuses, and in fact, in the 4J area, there are several middle schools that are open campuses. And so we need to provide choices for kids on campus to keep them on campus. And to that end, point number three, as to allude to headlines that I've seen, that students are hooked on sodas, if you will, and to what Kathy's already mentioned. We, as a soft drink organization, did poll 80% of the student population in the state of Oregon using a certified public accounting firm in Bend. And as Kathy mentioned, less than one can per week is consumed of sugared colas through the soft drinks through the schools. In addition, I would point out that on top of that, 40% of the drinks that are consumed are of water, juice, or non-caloric drinks. So kids are already making choices and making wise choices when necessary. And we, as an industry, are providing those choice opportunities to those students. And I would say that that is less than 150 calories per week per student. And for those of us that exercise to maintain a healthy lifestyle, to me, that's 10 minutes on elliptical trainer a week. So when you start thinking about caloric output, or as I said, calories in, calories out, that's 10 minutes of strenuous activity a week that one has to burn off. I would also say my fourth point is that Oregon soft drink bottlers have a strong commitment to our communities and local schools, and we've demonstrated this to local schools for many years. Kathy alluded to this also. Speaking selfishly, I would say that my family has been involved in the soft drink business for 58 years. We have had a commitment to those schools for 58 years, and in fact, our company has been present in those schools for 58 years. We're talking about the rising obesity issue. I myself remember going to high school. I have my 20-year reunion coming up this summer back down in Roseburg, and I remember there being soft drink machines in school, and in fact, we did not have the choices that students have today. I believe we are rising to the challenge of the choices that our students need to make, and I think the students are capable of doing that also, and I take any questions.
Thank you very much, Eric. I appreciate your testimony, and I said in my opening comments that the industry is adjusting, and indeed you are adjusting, and I think it's great that you are putting healthy foods in the machine. So it isn't a question of getting rid of the machines. That's not the question at all. It's the healthy foods, and you are making progress, so I do congratulate you.
And I would just reiterate that I also think it's about choice. I think it's about, and I would hold us all to that standard. I myself had my Starbucks coffee this morning. We all make our opportunities to when we want to have calories. And I think students need also to have that opportunity to learn when it's right to have a soft drink and when it's right to have a 20-ounce water or when they need an isotonic beverage. And I think that's the opportunity we're providing.
If I'm not mistaken, Mr. Forrest, the high schools in Eugene also have coffee carts.
That very well, I'm not aware of that. But
in high school, back when my kids were in school, which was a long while ago, 96 and 98, but they had a coffee cart.
There's some coffee.
Yeah, I wouldn't be letting my kids drink coffee at that age. Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Erica Hetfeld today here on behalf of the Grocery Manufacturers of America, which is the trade association for the world's leading food, beverage, and consumer products. I'll be very brief today. You have my written testimony with a few points, as well as a Salem Statesman Journal editorial from this Sunday. You'll find embedded my written points. I'd just like to outline a few of those, one of which is that I served on the task force, the Food Choices in Oregon Schools Task Force.
Thank you.
Everybody came together to form sort of a grab bag where local school districts, whether they be in Baker, whether they be in Eugene, or up in Hillsboro, can form these local wellness policies that are going to be mandated to re-up in the 2006 National School Lunch Program, as Mr. Burke had previously mentioned.
I feel like coming together in that group with so many folks and come up with so many policies is something that this legislation would go around and shirk, and I feel like one size fits all solutions don't necessarily work for this policy. For example, if I handed a small T-shirt to everybody on the committee, it wouldn't necessarily fit correctly for everyone. So GMA supports giving everybody the chance to form their own local policies. Finally, just these two paragraphs I have outlined in the Salem Statesman Journal article. I'll quote from it. Even the legislature is plunging into the fray with several proposals to ban or limit sales of junk food in schools. This sounds like the least palatable alternative, substituting a statewide stick for a local carrot. It continues, each community must find its own solution. GMA agrees with this, and thank you for bringing this issue forward.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, well, we'll move along. Thank you for coming, all of you. We will hear now from Dr. Jim Lace, Darlene King, and Noel Dobson. And then after that, we'll go to the Con Group, Sharon Morgan, Cindy Henley, and Chris Bozak. And Dr. Lace, why don't you go first? I think you have a time commitment to exit this building.
Thank you.
Sooner rather than later.
For the record, I'm Jim Lace. I'm a pediatrician from Salem. I represent the Oregon Pediatric Society and the Oregon Medical Association. We're here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 560 and Senate Bill 860. I'm just going to go over just a couple of real quick things. Some of you have heard me talk before on childhood obesity. Right now, I just want to remind you that 65% of adults in this country are overweight and 31% are obese. And adult obesity is defined as having a BMI over 30. For children, you have to use the growth charts to make that same determination. We have about 16% of the children right now that are obese, and our numbers in the state are about the same as they are nationwide. There's no, any let up in the increasing rate of obesity. We see that every day in our office, and we deal with that. I want to remind the panel that the government and the U.S. citizens have banded together before in a coordinated way to fight an epidemic. We looked at cigarette usage and decided that was a big issue for this country and looked at the deaths from that. We are now back down to a rate of cigarette usage in this country that's at about pre-World War II level. So we can make a difference as a government. We can make a difference as a society if we get together. And it's not just one thing of banning, quote, junk food in schools. It's a lot of other approaches, society education. The state can provide the legislative oversight for addressing this problem. Currently, we spend about $200 million a year of state tax dollars taking care of obesity issues. I have the numbers there from our local Marion County Health Plan. That's about $13 million is spent on just diabetes, and you go up to about another, add in the other diseases of obesity, and that goes up to about 20%. So it's in the state's fiscal interest to actually become very involved in this issue, because as the incidence of obesity escalates, we're going to end up spending more tax dollars to combat, all the problems that we have. That we've heard that children don't learn as well when they're obese. They suffer from depression. They have a lot of health issues. And I've got that in my testimony. I have a few ideas that I've outlined there. We don't expect the schools to be the only solution to this problem. Nobody is saying that this is going to solve the issue. They are, however, in a unique position to offer guidance, to offer examples. I will add something else into this. And when you talk about soft drinks, I'll take a little difference with the soft drinks manufacturers. It's a big, big dollar industry in this country. We know that. We appreciate that. They've been good partners in the schools. If you look at current amount of consumption, there's at least one study in children and one study that came out of Boston looking at nurses, and the difference in the groups was just one soft drink a day. You think, hey, 12 ounces, it's only 150 calories. If you add that in day after day, and you don't have that broken up, that amounts to, in children, it can be as much as 12 pounds a year, and in adult women, the nurses that were studying in the Boston study, that added up to about 4 pounds a year. You think, well, hey, what's 4 pounds? I can exercise that off. Well, in fact, it doesn't happen that way, and so you look at why are we obese? There's lots of issues. You have to look at what we're eating, what we're drinking, lack of exercise, all kinds of other issues that are involved with that. But we can approach some very direct topics. If you look at the wording in these bills, they talk about competitive foods. you have to realize that the visions that come into these kids, they're watching the Saturday morning cartoons, they're watching things on TV, they are competing for these children. The ads that are out there are competing. They see those ads. They glomp onto those things. And so this offers, you know, if you will, non-competition. And it takes away, you know, what kind of advertising. Advertising works very well. My cardiology friends tell me if it tastes good, spit it out, because it's bad for you, obviously. But, you know, you can do other things with that. But that's the sort of thing that we're up against. You know, these are, you know, easy to do. They're easy to make. Not so much easy to make, but they're easy to eat. And you get a lot of calories very quickly without actually appreciating, you know, what's going in. So, again, I'll end up my testimony just saying that we are in support of this. And this is only a beginning. We know that. This is not going to solve the issues, but this is an important beginning.
Thank you. Dr. Lace, I do recall you being here previously on the...
And you'll see me again.
All right. We'll look forward to it. Next.
Chair Walker, members of the committee, my name is Noelle Dobson. I'm the board chair of Upstream Public Health. I have a master's degree in public health promotion and work professionally to promote physical activity and nutrition. I served as a member on the task force and also today represent the Oregon Nutrition Policy Alliance. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm going to speak primarily to the issue of local control, but would also like to point out that included with my written testimony is a fact sheet about the financial implications of this bill. And I'd also like to address a couple points that have come up regarding open campuses and the federal wellness policies. Policymakers at the federal and state level have clearly said in the past that it is not in the best interest, either educationally or nutritionally, to be offering children high-fat, high-sugar foods in the breakfast and lunch program and in the cafeteria during mealtimes. With the proliferation in recent decades of competitive foods, it's time to extend this protection to this newest threat to school health. A statewide standard ensures that all children receive protection from the harmful effects of unhealthy foods and beverages. While we have seen some examples of local districts making efforts to improve the nutrition environment, the fact is that this is a very small percentage of schools in Oregon. And when it comes to replacing soda and candy, the work is very difficult. We have seen over and over again in Oregon and throughout the country, local campaigns to remove soda and junk food from schools are met with stiff opposition from the beverage and snack industry. It has been rare that even dedicated and committed local groups have been successful against these powerful interests. We see this in the form of 7, 10, 12-year contracts that put soda around nearly every corner in our hallways in some of our schools. Senate Bills 560 and 860 mean that each and every school in Oregon does not have to wage this battle. We can protect all Oregon children by replacing the worst offenders that we know are posing a health threat to our youth. I'd like to just briefly address the open campus issue that has been raised. The issue here isn't to regulate what students get off campus. The point is that schools should not be offering these unhealthy foods during the school day. We shouldn't justify offering unhealthy foods in schools just because they can get it somewhere else. I'd also like to respond directly to the concerns that Senate Bill 560 and 860 stifle local control and eliminate local decision-making regarding school nutrition. Upstream Public Health does not view school nutrition and children's health as an either-or issue, nor do we believe that all decisions regarding school nutrition should be made at the state level. To be clear, these bills are by no means a complete fix to a very multifaceted problem, and indeed there is much for local entities to do. I'd also like to respond to the discussion about the federal wellness policies and that these bills would infringe on their ability to implement the wellness policies in 2006. Just to restate, the federal regulations do require that schools develop nutritional standards for foods sold outside the meal program, but they do not articulate what those nutrition standards should say, only that they need to be developed. I can personally vouch for the fact that developing nutrition standards that find a balance between children's health, implementation feasibility, and financial stability is very difficult. It's a complicated process. And schools will have a leg up on these federal wellness policies if 560 and 860 are passed. Without implementation of 560, the wellness policies will be much more of a burden for schools to implement. This helps them move towards implementing these policies. I'd just like to close by saying that a view of the landscape in our schools shows us that we are currently offering an overabundance of unhealthy foods and beverages. In fact, when we hear that 80% of a food's offerings could not be sold under these very reasonable standards, that the majority of the offerings are too high in fat or too high in sugar or in too large of portion sizes to fit in these reasonable standards, that underscores the need that something needs to be done. Senate Bill 650 is not a sweeping mandate that takes away local decision-making about school food service. It does not prescribe exactly what foods can and cannot be sold. It's not about eliminating snacks in school. It's about replacing snacks with healthier options. It sets parameters for vendors and schools to use to offer healthier choices for their students. In closing, competitive foods have gone unregulated in Oregon for too long. Many other states are putting children's health first and setting reasonable standards for what foods and beverages can be sold. It's time for Oregon to join this effort. The severity of our children's health crisis requires action that will immediately benefit all of Oregon's school children, and I again urge you to support Senate Bills 560 and 860. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We're going to be running out of time, so I'm really going to start clamping down on, now everybody's down to 2 minutes because we don't have enough. If you have written testimony, please submit it and just give us the highlights so that we can make sure everyone gets a chance to be heard, because frankly, I need to have a break before our evening hearing.
I hear you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm Darlene Kane, and I would please ask you to look at, I'm from the American Diabetes Association, and we have submitted to you the testimony from Laura Thielander also. Her testimony, she's very, very sick today. Sorry she couldn't be here. She is the Western Advocacy Director for the American Diabetes Association. And her, we dovetailed on this. Her testimony gives you a little more of the factual aspect of type 2 diabetes in kids. I wanted to tell you that I'm a native Oregonian. I've lived in Sherwood 31 years and before moving to Gaston recently, and I'm passionately concerned about this bill. I want you to know that I think I bring a unique perspective to this discussion because I began my professional life as a classroom teacher and then left there to become our family business manager for our family dental practice. And I also served 12 years with some of you as a school board member in Sherwood School Board. And there I became very critically aware and real involved with the school finances, including the struggle for new money to come into schools for revenue for outside of our schools, our tax supports. But what brings me here today is really my association and concern for kids with type 2 diabetes due to their obesity and those overweight that are at risk for diabetes. I'm the current national vice chairman of the American Diabetes Association, and I really represent 18.6 million people who have diabetes in America today. That bill for diabetes, money spent on diabetes, is $1.7 billion in Oregon, $130 billion in America. But I'm involved with that association just to give you a little bit of knowing what happens with diabetes. I have in my family 23 people with diabetes who have lived with that disease and died from it. And since my birth, I have actually seen and watched all the complications of blindness, amputations, kidney loss, kidney dialysis, and all those inherent heart problems. All of us that are here today and all of you, I think we understand that we are becoming inundated with kids and youth with a new disease to them. It's called type 2 diabetes. It was once known as adult onset diabetes. It is no more adult onset, folks. We now have an epidemic type 2 diabetes with kids in America today. The CDC has predicted that 1 in 3 children who are born after the year 2000 will develop type 2 diabetes in their lifetime. Much of this fact has been documented here today of unhealthy vending machines, and I'm not going to go through all of that because, you know, I too well remember looking for non-tax dollars and when I was on the school board, looking for ways to fund school scoreboards for games and programs for football games. Today, I've developed the courage of my convictions, and I believe that by what we call junk food, being allowing for that in those school cafeterias as our adult, as adult leaders, we're just contributing to the onset of type 2 diabetes in kids. I understand very well that type 2 diabetes and making kids diabetes is a combination of genetics and environment. We cannot control the genetics, but you and I and all of us in this room can control the environmental factors. We can either decide to contribute to the health problem, or we can stand up and try to solve it. Let us have the courage of our convictions and join in the efforts begun all over our nation in those districts that you have heard about today. I really believe the philosophy of every single organization begins at the top, and I applaud you. You are at the height of the highest esteem. You are the top in our Oregon legislature. And I want to end for you a quote from Dr. Francine Kaufman, who is an international expert from California, an international expert on type 2 diabetes, and also leads some of the efforts for changes in kids' diets. This is her quote from the latest book, Diabesity. I will say, I end my comments with this. The fundamental question that we must answer is this. Should students be expected to pay any part of their education by buying things like sodas that are bad for their health? Is this really the expectations we have for our students, and is this the legacy that we all want to leave? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank all three of you for coming. We appreciate it. Okay, now we're going to go to Sharon Morgan, Cindy Henley, and Chris Bozak. And after that, we'll go up to Chris Mosbach, Mary Lou Henrich, and Nancy Becker. I'm going to take us till 10 after 5, which violates my own policy to get out of here at 5 o'clock. So please, that doesn't mean you can take 3 minutes. That means two. Thank you. Go ahead, friend. Take the mic and run.
Okay. Chairwoman Walker and members of the committee, thank you for your time. My name is Sharon Morgan. I'm a registered dietitian. I have been a registered dietitian for 25 years, and I currently work with schools and students. I have similar concerns as everyone has spoken of here in terms of childhood obesity, adult obesity, just obesity in general. I do think we have to do something about it. I don't disagree with that. I look at this bill and I see many things that are really, really great. But I'm thinking of what Senator Morris had said when we started, which is that he's seen this sort of evolution since 1999 come, and he knows it's going to happen, and I think it's going to happen, but I don't think this is the bill. The reason that I don't is because when I look at the minimum state standards, as they're mentioned, for the items such as the 300 calories and the 200 calories for snacks and things. Speaking of someone who works in food service, this would drastically affect a lot of items that are sold that are healthful. It doesn't teach our children the right message. For example, it will say things like, as Janet Beer had mentioned, you can't serve an entree that's more than 300 calories unless they meet certain standards, like 7 grams of fat. Three of these items have to be followed. It would disqualify lots of entrees that I currently sell that are healthful. I don't think that teaches our children the right thing. I think we're going to end up taking a lot of things off the shelf that are really healthy and good, and it isn't the right criterion. When it's been mentioned that these are reasonable minimum state standards, who set the reasonableness? Who says these are reasonable? Are these research-based? I want to know who wrote these standards as a registered dietitian. I think that's the piece that needs re-evaluation and needs to be looked at. I think many other things in this bill are just marvelous, and I would like to see it as a parent and as a person who's working with students. But this piece will not be fiscally neutral. It will not be. And I don't think anyone here really has... I think the people that work in purchasing food and the people that work directly in schools have that knowledge, since it has been mentioned it's not always brought forth and, you know, talked about. But speaking as someone who works in schools, this will definitely not be fiscally neutral, and this would just be catastrophic is the word I would use in many school districts across the state. Thank you for listening to my comments.
Madam Chairperson and committee members, I'm Cindy Hyatt-Henry. I live out by McMinnville. I'm the food service director and supervisor of the school nutrition program in McMinnville School District. I've been in schools for 24 years. I have my degree from Oregon State in dietetics and have used it in schools all that time. I, too, have a deep concern about obesity and all of the factors that we've talked about in terms of health and child nutrition. But I do believe in the federal child nutrition programs, and I've seen what it can do for especially underprivileged children, and I believe that it does good things. I also believe that we do need to do something about food sold outside the federal programs, but I believe that through reauthorization and local control and local support, that we will be able to develop those changes. I've seen what the foods of minimal nutritional value regulations do. We have them. They've been around forever. We're not supposed to sell certain items, and we try to teach our principals and everybody else in the school district about what they can and cannot sell. They sell them anyway. We don't have the funds or the staff to monitor what people sell and don't sell. What we need is for people to believe in what we sell and don't sell. And I feel that the only way we can develop that is with local developed wellness policies and programs that are mandated with the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Act of 2004. Thank you.
Thank you. It's sounding to me from some of the discussion I've heard today that this will have a fiscal impact on local districts because you'll have to have staff come in and decide what's appropriate and what's not appropriate.
Yes, we believe that we will need to hire outside resources to be able to develop and make sure that we are meeting the guidelines in the House bill. In addition, we will already be challenged to meet the Reauthorization Act. Fiscally, that will impact us as well, not just child nutrition programs, but the programs that the extracurricular activities have tried to supplement through the sale of foods. And while, yes, we need to change what is sold, and I would love to police that, we need to develop programs to make that work.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Decker.
Thank you. And I know we're all trying to get a break here at 5, so I'll just ask one quick question. And I've told the supporters of the bill that I'm going to go into a school in my district and take a look at the vending machines and take a look at what's being served. But I guess I would ask you the question, since it's been a while since, although probably not too long, but it's been a while since I've been in.
In an
educational or a high school or junior high in more than 2 years. What if I walked into a school in McMinnville today? What have I found both in the vending machines and served for lunch?
You would find, if for lunch, foods meeting the federal programs as outlined by the USDA.
For example, what would I find today?
Today, I was very busy with this today. I can't tell you the exact menu, but we offer choices every day. We offer, for meals, we offer a poultry choice, we offer a beef choice, and we offer a vegetarian choice every day. In addition, we have a fruit and vegetable bar every day, salads, fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, canned fruits if we can't get them, and we offer bread items that go along with the federal regulations. That is the lunch program. This bill addresses the foods that are outside the lunch program. And so while I feel that the federally regulated and mandated programs are healthy and do offer healthy choices, this bill is addressing those foods that are sold outside, that clubs sell, that athletics sell to supplement, that fans sell to purchase uniforms. And those foods help those groups. However, without their understanding and buy-in locally about what types of foods they sell, they're selling foods that are of minimal nutritional value, pop, candy, those kinds of things.
That what's in the vending machine? And what would be in the vending machine?
In the vending machines, when I police it, I get the foods of minimal nutritional value out. If I don't police it, there may be foods of minimal nutritional value. We do see chips. We see chips with whole grain. We also see chocolate, which is not in the foods of minimal nutritional value. We do see candy. That is a food of minimal nutritional value. We will see pop in the high schools. We don't see pop in the middle schools. We do not have vending in the elementaries.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We're down to about a minute and a half now.
All right, I'll speak as fast as I can.
Okay, we need to ask questions. Well, as I said, if you have written testimony, you can submit it. Just give us some high points.
Okay. My name is Chris Bosak. I am a registered
and licensed dietitian in the state of Oregon. I retired from school food service after 16 years as an assistant director in Portland Public Schools and 2.5 years with Lake Oswego School District as the director. And I'm currently in private practice consulting to school districts and food manufacturers. My tiny point I want to address, because it's important, because the proponents say that it's just you pass the stone, magically manufacturers are going to throw foods at us that meet these criteria. I'm here to speak in opposition to this particular approach that's in these two bills to addressing childhood obesity and the food sold in schools. And I would like to do that because this bill will severely impact manufacturers' ability to sell foods to schools. In my work with Land O'Lakes Foods in particular, I've been on several different advisory committees, and I found it most disheartening to find out that school food service in Oregon and Northwest as a whole is not a big enough piece of the pie to drive R&D decisions at the corporate level in major companies. It takes an LA Unified, it takes a New York City, it takes a state of Texas to drive an R&D decision. So my concerns are this bill will complicate manufacturers' marketing to Oregon schools. This is nutrition nonsense, gobbledygook in many ways. It will take someone explaining it to them so they understand how to sell their products to schools. Major corporations cannot and or will not modify products to create new products or create new products to meet arbitrary criteria that are specific to Oregon. So we need to be careful that we pick criteria that can be applied nationwide if possible if we want companies to cater to us. It will further complicate maintaining fiscally sound school food service operations by adding an additional layer of governmental regulation in advance of the federally mandated nutrition policy development that has been discussed previously. And in addition, at the state level, it may be revenue neutral. They're careful to say revenue neutral, but this bill is not fiscally neutral. It will add a new unfunded burden to ODE and to Joyce Doherty's department to implement and provide oversight of compliance with the regulations that are very specific in these bills. I would like to say that as validation of the progress that's being made in Oregon school districts, I've given you a copy of the latest newsletter from Land O'Lakes that goes out to school foods, and the lead article is what is happening in the Tiger Tualatin in schools. And you can read it to go on further. So I would like to request that the findings of the ODE task force be allowed to go forward and that districts be allowed to meet the USDA mandates prior to implementing further regulation that is not consistent with either of those processes. And we have already paid as taxpayers for what ODE's task force has produced. I think we need to give it time to work. I'd also like to echo a very important point that I feel Mr. Pat Burke made and may have gotten missed in all of this regarding regulating food sales outside of the cafeteria. I was the district administrator in Portland Public Schools for the beverage pouring rights contract that the district signed with Coca-Cola. I managed that contract for 2.5 years and its implementation. And in the course of that, worked with every administrator, principal, and a whole host of teachers and parents in implementing it. School administrators, principals, teachers, clubs, and parent groups sell food of any kind for only one reason, to replace funds that have been cut from districts for support of a myriad of valuable student-supporting activities. There is no school administrator, and I'm willing to state that based on my work with Portland, that would get into the food sales business with its attendant sanitation and student management issues if they were adequately funded. So there's a bigger issue here than just what's being sold. These bills will not stop the sale of these foods. It is very careful in the bill to say that they're not touching what happens after school. I can tell you that parents and student groups and everything else will get very creative in figuring out how not to violate this bill and still sell everything, because what makes money the fastest is selling sugar and fat.
Thank
and
you,
that
Ms.
concerns me greatly.
Ms. Bozak, you've taken about 4 minutes. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
We appreciate your testimony.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just reading this list, and I know it doesn't apply to the school lunch program, but I had school lunch tear up through middle school, and I don't think any of the lunches I had would meet this test, which I find interesting. And I also say this is one of the most prescriptive mandates I've ever seen. I don't know how it eases bureaucracy.
Which school are you referencing?
560.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to ask for, I'm sorry, amended testimony from the rest of you because there are 369 of you. Craig Mosbeck, Mary Lou Henrick, and Nancy Becker. Yeah, I know. We need dinner. That's why.
Madam Chair?
So let me say that if you have something brand new that we haven't heard before, that's what we want to hear.
Okay. Will do.
Thank you.
My name is Nancy Becker, and I'm a registered dietitian, a member of the Food Choices in Oregon Schools Task Force. I teach nutrition at PSU in the chemistry department, and I'm on the board of the Oregon Dietetic Association. I'm the mother of two teenage sons in Portland Public Schools, and I'm here in support of Senate Bill 560. I recently took a trip to my son's middle school and purchased an array of items from the school vending machines. Here's a few of the things that I found. Potato chips, 230 calories. Donuts, 330 calories. Pop-Tarts, 420 calories. Grandma's cookies, or I shouldn't say the brand name, cookies, 360 calories. And a package of cookies that was 600 calories. These are snacks. This is not meant to replace lunch. It's not anything to do with the school lunch program. These are snacks that we are providing to our kids. Under SB 560, we would substitute different snacks, and I've brought along some examples of the kind of snacks that would meet the criteria that are set in the bill at this point. Beef jerky, 150 calories. Popcorn, 110 calories. Tillamook yogurt, a locally produced product, 190 calories. Pretzels, 170 calories. Corn nuts, 180 calories. And Newton bars, 130 calories. I want to emphasize that these are not replacing what's in school lunch. We're not talking about the school lunch program. These are foods that kids have the option to buy as snacks. I'd also like to say that with statewide nutrition standards, the burden is on the vendors to comply with the law. It would be known that in Oregon, you need to supply the schools with appropriate products. It would take the burden off the individual school districts and take the burden off the individual school food administrators to police what foods are in the machines, because the wrong foods wouldn't be able to be sold. Implementation of nutrition standards is easier on the state level. Becoming fat is not a choice kids consciously make. The availability of high-calorie, low-calorie foods makes it hard for kids to make the healthy choice. Heck, it's hard for us, the adults, to eat only one cookie in a bag or half a bag of chips. Why do we think the kids can do this? Help make the healthy choice the easy choice for children. Please support 560.
Okay, Ms. Becker, I was just going to cut you off. I'm sorry. We have your written testimony. Oh. I loved your visuals. Let's go on. Ms. Henrick? And we have your written testimony.
Yes.
Please don't read it.
I won't. My name is Mary Lou Henrich. I just want to say I'm a nurse, a parent, a public health advocate, and work for a nonprofit public health organization that has been involved, very involved, in developing these standards and putting this bill together. I guess what I'd like you to look at is the second page.
Okay.
Little chart that does kind of put out the Senate Bill 560 facts, what the bill does and does not do. And I think there does get to be confusion. And I would urge you to take a look at this because we keep hearing that this will restrict choice. It won't. Students can bring any food or beverage from their choice from home. It does not restrict choice. It does not prohibit schools from selling beverages or snack items to raise money. One thing that is in the bill as it's written, we do have some amendments in that have not made it through yet. There was a mistake. It should have been 350 calories, and we actually for the entree items instead of 300. And we did have school food administrators. They didn't have to hire extra staff. They have programs where they're able to run their foods through the computerized program, and they were the ones who actually came back. It was people from Portland District who came back and said 350 seemed like a reasonable amount. We're not stuck on the exact calories. We can modify, but we're looking for the concept of saying we have got to get the really foods of minimal nutritional value, foods that have mostly junk out of the schools and not sell them. We should be selling our kids what we're telling them. We're telling them to have good nutrition and teaching all of this, and then they walk right out of that classroom and are confronted with things that the school is selling that don't reflect what we're telling.
All right, thank you. Mr. Mossberg, one minute.
Thank you, Chair Walker, member of this committee, for giving me this opportunity to talk to you about this important issue, the health of our children. I'll keep my comments brief and just mention a couple of things that haven't been brought up yet. Just a few years ago, policymakers were not aware of the growing obesity epidemic. But just in the last 2 weeks, the newspaper headlines are, tide of child obesity rising. Average life expectancy will drop because of obesity. Child obesity rising faster in rural areas. This is a problem that is only going to get worse until we take action. In the 1970s, when vending machines and high-sugar snacks started getting into our schools, we didn't know the obesity epidemic was starting. Then unhealthy foods proliferated, and now we're realizing the harm. I appreciate the local control arguments and the opposition of some of the people who work in food services and schools. No one wants another cook in the kitchen. But the kids in Baker are the same as the kids in Coos Bay. They all thrive on healthy food. I have a 7-year-old daughter in second grade in public school, and my wife and I teach her good nutrition and model it at home. We tell her what food she can buy when she goes to school, and I think she listens now. But parents need support. With good nutrition being taught in my home, I need to know that it's not being undermined at school. In a few short years, when she and her classmates are in middle school and then high school, we all know that parents will have less influence and less control over what they eat. And it's the high schools and middle schools where you see the worst of the junk food today. We are here today because we believe every child in Oregon deserves the safeguards outlined in Senate Bill 560 and 860. For the health of our children, I urge you to support these bills. Thank you again for this opportunity, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I wish we had time, but I have to be concerned about the health of my committee, and we have a committee at 6, so thank you. We have 6 more people to testify. I mean it. You're going to be limited to 1 minute. I'm going to hit the buzzer. Lupita Salazar. I'm going to finish up with the Con Group, and they're paid lobbyists. So Lupita Salazar, Joan Randall, Jane Myers. You come up. You've got 1 minute apiece. And then Chuck Bennett, David Williams, John Powell, and Lou Lamerti will finish this up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jane Myers, I have written testimony. We are in support of Senate Bill 516 from the Oregon Dental Association.
Thank you, Jane. We'll read your testimony, we promise.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Joan Randall from the OHSU Center for the Study of Weight Regulation. We support both Bill 560 and 860. Much of what we were going to say has already been said today. I'm going to turn in my testimony. I will reiterate, as a parent of a 16-year-old child at Benson High School, that it tears me apart every time I walk into that school and see the vending machines filled with soda and candy. If we can take a small step to solve this problem, I think we need to do it.
Thank you, Ms. Randall. And Ms. Salazar, you have a beautiful young woman with you.
Thank you very much. Yes, my name is Lupita Salazar-Letcher, and this is my daughter, Graciela Salazar-Letcher. She's 5 years old. She's not yet in school. She's in Montessori preschool. I am also a nurse, and I am a member of the safety net, the community health centers. And I'd just like to share with you an observation of what I'm seeing in our community health centers. We know that obesity, heart disease, and diabetes are epidemic. And I think as an ICU nurse, I took care of open hearts, lung transplants, and these were patients that were very sick. I'm very, very concerned about our young people. I'm very concerned about my daughter going into a school system that is making choices They started out as fiscal choices. And I am very concerned about living my daughter's health. She knows how to make, and teaching her how to make good choices. She knows everyday foods and special occasion foods. This is very important. But consistency is most important. And kids are human. You put acceptable choices in front of our children. And these are things that parents do. An apple and a banana and an orange are choices. Soda pop, donuts, and chips are not choices. Thank you. And again, I would urge you to support Senate Bill 560 and 860 as well. Thank you
very much for coming today. We appreciate both you and your daughter being here.
She's dying. So
yeah. Okay, Chuck Bennett, David Williams, John Powell, Lou Lamerte. Come on, guys. Being good lobbyists, I know you've got written testimony. So just state your name, who you're with, and your position on the record, and I'm going to give you till 20 after total.
Madam Chair, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. We would just associate our organization's opinion, which is in opposition to the two bills, to the school officials you've heard earlier, and want to just underscore again one more time on page 3 of the task force report, which I hope you'll take a look at. I have devoted about 40 hours to this task force, working with people of different opinion, and we all came together, and one of the findings we made, I think it's included on page 3 at the bottom of the executive summary, we as a task force believe we need buy-in and support from our local schools and communities. To that end, this report supports the model of local policy making and local community involvement, and then goes on from there. This is what the task force found. You'll find a number of the people on each side of this issue served on the task force. We operated in a consensus fashion and we all agreed on this approach. So why we're here, I think, eludes me. It certainly runs counter to the spirit of what we found in that task force.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. That was 16.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, David Williams, Oregon School Boards Association. Again, echo all the comments made in opposition to the need for a statewide solution to 198 various local solutions to the issue facing us. We do want to thank Senator Morissette for highlighting the issue. I think the last couple of sessions have served as a beck and call to school districts to begin to address this issue, and I think for the most part they have. Just to mention, Chuck Bennett handed out to the committee a lot of examples of what is happening just in the last 2 weeks as districts begin to form task forces and community involvement, a lot in response to their communities as well as to response to the federal regulations. And I've handed out as well a copy of our Focus on Critical Issues, which highlights some best practice examples of what districts are doing around the state, very different examples between, say, Grants Pass and Beaverton, very different answers, as well as sample OSBA policy. You may or may not know, but OSBA provides a policy service to all school districts, and this is a policy that was developed a number of years ago, the date's eluding me, in collaboration with a lot of advocates on this issue to serve for districts as a way to adopt good local policy to address this issue. Thank you.
Mr. Williams, did you hand that testimony, the policy?
She's got it all.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Okay.
She had a big stack, so it may take a
minute. There's a lot.
Madam Chairman, Senators, I'm Louis Liberty from Coos Bay. I own Ben West Services, and I supply vending and food service to 8 schools up and down the coast, and I have been in this business since 1964, helping school districts when they're without cafeterias and also providing what you people call junk food, I call snack foods, so let's get the clarification right, please. But in my 8 schools that I service right now, with the first quarter of the year, my sales per student per week are from the low of 96 cents a week to $1.13 high a week. That equivalates to...
Wait a minute. Repeat that number, please.
96 cents per student per week to $1.13 high
That's how much students spend per week on your snack food?
On my, I'm not talking about the soda beverage machine, because Pepsi and Coke do the majority of that. I'm just telling you what my first quarter of business did in the 8 schools that I service, okay?
Okay.
That equivalents to units in an average of about 80 to 85 cents a unit, maybe from 1 to 1.4 units per week.
That Mr. Morse, like a lucrative business.
Well, we're talking about 1,200 students, so to 500 students. That's, you know, we do it. So I'm just telling you where it's at and how long I've been doing it. And I do work with school districts from up and down, and I do work with principals, superintendents, and I don't think a state-mandated situation does work. Because I do, and that includes the so-called bad and so-called good items that you people talk about. Mr. Morissette has been after our business for a long time in the school business, and I think we've done an admirable job of servicing kids and not making them obese. And you can see by the numbers that every student can run in the door and put $1,000 in each unit and just damn, fall down. I got to talk with my hands. So that I'm just, if there's any questions, I'd love to answer them. I had a written statement, but I...
Is it here?
No, I didn't. But it was very light in just saying that, that obesity isn't caused by vending machines. And one other thing.
Should I wear a Snickers?
I wear my Snickers well.
Okay.
One thing, we do not, in any junior high that I am in, they are timed out until the last bus leaves. And they're mostly in gymnasiums that are used for activities. And we don't have any, never have had any machines in elementary schools other than in a gymnasium for activities at after school.
Okay.
For the public to use.
All right. I see Mr. Powell behind you. Mr. Powell, you're dismissed? Okay.
You are.
Oh, we are. Well, thank you. Okay, gentlemen, thank you. Thank you for staying late. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 560 and 816. Colleagues, I'm going to give us till 10 after 6 to get some dinner and rest up. Our
Do we have any vending machines handy?
Yes, upstairs. Our committee will be adjourned until 6:10.
And we're doing...